Buffalo can hang on. This is going to be a good one.
The fans at Kansas Speedway know how to have a good time. And you are all invited. NASCAR weekend at Kansas Speedway, May 4th and 5th. Get your tickets now at kansasspeedway.com.
This is the Sporting KC Show on Sports Radio 810 WHB.
It falls to Eli on the volley! What a finish! Gotti Kinda has struck! It falls to Polino and he puts it in! To Johnny Russell, first time shot, and Johnny Russell has a hat trick!
The Sporting KC Show is brought to you by Michelob Ultra, superior light beer with only 95 calories and 2.6 carbs. Michelob Ultra. Find your fit.
Now your host, Nate Buchady.
Hello and welcome to another edition of the Sporting Kansas City Show on your home for SKC Soccer, Sports Radio 810, WHB. Wherever you get your podcasts, wherever you download your content, we appreciate you listening, subscribing, liking, all those things. I am Nate Buchady, joined as always by, what do you call that color of Celtic jersey? Mint green? Is that the...
Mint, probably.
I like the mint green
one. I dig it.
Connell McCord here. How are you, buddy?
I'm good, mate. How are you?
Oh, doing well. I'm actually not very well right now. We're talking soccer, but we'll get to that in a moment. Allie, how are you?
I'm anxious, I think, ahead of tomorrow night. I think that's the word that I will use.
Yeah, anxious because the overused meme of the dog sipping the cup of coffee while the house is burning down, saying this is fine, comes to mind right now.
For a lot of reasons.
We're going to get into that. Look, we're going to talk a lot of Sporting Kansas City soccer. There's a big game coming up on Saturday against Chicago, and it's the 20-year anniversary of September 11th. We're going to have a very special guest on in the next segment to talk about the special flyover that's going to happen on what is a day that the 20-year anniversary of a day that changed the whole world. So, and it's going to be, I think that's going to be a powerful conversation. And so we'll do that, and then we'll also preview a little bit the game coming up against Chicago. But we have to start with the United States men's national team because it all reflects, I'll say it a million times, this country is more dependent on the production of their national team than any other country in the world when it comes to the popularity of the sport. Connell, you're from the north of Ireland.
Correct.
Got myself correct there. You've been in the UK. If the Scotland national team fails to qualify for the World Cup, which they usually do, I hate to say, as
big win today, though.
Big win today. They're still going to the Celtic matches. They're still going to the Rangers matches. It's not an issue here. It's different. So we're going to talk about it. Two draws, disappointing on both fronts. I thought disappointing performances as much as results, and then the Weston McKennie train wreck is unfolding right in front of our eyes. First, it's the news that he's not going to play in the game against Canada. Then the team goes out, and they get a 1-0 lead. They switch off defensively, John Brooks. They give up a goal to make it 1-1. They don't really have many answers to break down the low block that Canada has. They settle for a draw. Everybody immediately afterwards, you listen to former U.S. men's national team players, they were going in on Weston McKennie pretty hard that night in postgame. And I'm thinking to myself, okay, this must have been something bad. Mm-hmm. And then you hear Landon Donovan's comments, which anybody out there, if you're listening to this and you haven't heard Landon Donovan's comments yet, I'm surprised. But you can find them. He went on with Grant Wall and really laid into Weston McKennie. And guys, now we have reports out there from – because, look, there were rumors all over the place this morning on social media that we're not going to get into. But now soccer columnist from ESPN – Jeff Carlisle, sources, Weston McKennie was sent home for multiple violations of the USMNT COVID-19 protocol, including bringing an unauthorized person inside the team's bubble, also spent the night outside of the bubble. TUDN was first on the unauthorized person violation report. So multiple sources reporting is what's going on. He's been sent home to Italy, where he's already had his issues over there. And Jackson Ewell's been called in to replace him, a guy who was basically dropped from the Gold Cup first choice 11 because he wasn't performing. What do we make of all this? Connell, I'll start with you. Panic time? Is this just a watershed moment where the team galvanizes and circles the wagons and comes together? Like, what do we make of this?
Well, that's what it's all about. It's how they respond to it, isn't it? I mean, this could be catastrophic for them, because this game already going into tomorrow night is I mean, what is it? A must win, would you say? It's away from
it's
home.
It's close to it.
Look, it's away from home. It's obvious. Yeah. Seeing these type of things, you have to win your home games. And that's where they've kind of slipped up already. But Honduras tomorrow is going to be tough. And especially with them going in, you could be right. That could be the type of thing that pulls the team together, galvanizes them. Look, we don't need such and such player. And look, he's not the only one missing, because you've Reina missing as well, and you've Dest missing as well. So it's going to be tough for them, especially out there. But McKinney, just a silly boy. Like, what are you doing? I mean, with the amount that's at stake, knowing what happened the last time they didn't qualify, everything you put into it, that's not just the one, multiple. He's broke the protocol multiple times. Like, what can words fail you sometimes? But they're just going to have to build on it. They have to take it as this is just a stepping stone that they're going to have to get by. They're going to have to galvanize together and go as a group tomorrow, and they're going to have to put in a big performance, because I think they need at least a draw.
I'm worried, because I think that, say something happens in this game where they go down two goals, or like something, like things just start spiraling on field, I think it gets really easy. And this team up to this point hasn't proven that they have the mentality to rise above this type of controversy or situation. We have no idea how they're going to respond. You hope that, I think the hope is that, yes, this is something that can galvanize the team. But when these types of distractions happen, and not just happen, but involve one of your team's best players, I think there's a lot of reason to be concerned. And this is where I'm curious to see, how does Pulisic step up and get this team right mentally? How does Berhalter get this team right mentally? Because that, to me, is going to be something that it could creep in. Even, like, say they start the game fine. They need to maintain that for a full 90-plus minutes. And that's something that we haven't... They haven't been in a situation like this before. I mean, it's hard to really find many comparable situations to this. This is a very, like, unique and strange situation. But you're pissed off as a player, and I think that that's definitely the vibe from this team. And sometimes people can turn that pissed off energy into, you know, an incredible performance. And other times it gets in the way. Other times that emotion blocks your ability to perform at a high level. So it's just, I'm just curious. I said I was anxious. And this could be something that affects the team beyond just this game and this qualifying round. I mean, this isn't just a short term, how do they get through this tomorrow, and then, you know, all is going to be right after that. This is something that has, like, long-term implications ahead.
I think they need to be at it. See, tomorrow night, as soon as that whistle blows, they need to be at it from minute one, because you think Honduras aren't looking at this, licking their lips, like, oh, this team, this is a wounded animal. That's
This is a house divided.
And this is a massive, look, all around CONCACAF, the USA is the scalp. Everyone wants to beat the USA. This is their game. This is the one they're preparing for, especially at home. You've seen the crowd in El Salvador, how much they were into it and stuff, and they made it difficult for the US. It's going to be hard, because the last five games, the US haven't scored a goal in the first half. It's been 0-0 going into halftime for the last five competitive games, I believe. They need to start quick, and they need to kind of silence the Honduran crowd, or at least get them off their back, get their own fans on side at least. And the way it's been the last five games, it doesn't really look like that's on the cards. But as we said, this could be the type of thing that galvanizes them and pushes them towards it.
I'm incredibly nervous about this whole situation for several different reasons. Number one, I want to say, look, dressing room drama is not unique to just young teams. I want to say that.
Yeah.
We've seen experienced... I remember in 2002, I think it was, after France had won the World Cup, in their next World Cup, they had players storm off the field and practically go on strike, and they didn't make it out of the knockout rounds with a veteran-laden team that had won trophies. We've seen that happen with experienced winning teams and everything. So those things can happen because you got big egos, you got, you know, divas, all those types of things. But just imagine doing that now with a young, inexperienced team. And
that has enough stress on them, by the way. Like,
Weston McKennie was one of the reasons I was most optimistic. I knew what had happened in Juventus, but I thought to myself at that time, you've been in lockdown forever. You're a young guy. You can't go anywhere, so you had some people over to your place. I'm not saying it's okay, but I can understand it.
Everyone
a
makes
bit,
mistakes.
Right? Then you do this with everything that's at stake, and now you go, okay, this is a person that doesn't understand what it takes off the field. Because his mentality on the field, I love. He goes, he goes, he goes. He gets stuck in. He doesn't back down from people. The type of mentality I thought when you're going down to Honduras, the kind of player I want on my team. But that mentality on the field is only part of the approach. You have to have that mentality of I'm going to do what's best for the team off the field too. And it's clearly not there. So that worries me. And I will say this as well. Tyler Adams is one of my favorite players on the team to watch. I've had arguments with Benny Failhaber about whether or not he's the most important player for the team. He made an emotionally selfish decision in that game the other night when he decided to take his personal vendetta out against Mark Anthony Kay and snuff out his team's best chance maybe to score a second goal so he could get his little shot in. And that was emotionally immature. You know, I understand he's up for the fight, and you want the guy that's up for the fight, but the guy that's emotionally mature enough knows when the time is, when the place is, and not to sacrifice the team's goals for your personal vendetta right there. Mm-hmm. And I can chalk that up to maybe he learns from that and the next time around. But here's the thing. There's not that room for error with these guys. You know, and yeah, maybe they're the most talented team, but I remember you bringing this up last week, Allie. They're the most inexperienced team mm-hmm. that's been brought into something like this. And right now, two of the guys who are supposed to have the mentality to show, yeah, we might be young, but we're ready for it, have failed their first tests. And one of them failed it so poorly that he's off the team now, you know, and sent home. The other guy made a mistake in a game. I'm hoping Tyler Adams is going to have to be one of those guys that bounces back and takes his team by the scruff of the neck on Wednesday night in Honduras.
But that's where you, again, hope that there's not that kind of, like, blind rage that can... I have no idea what the temperament right now with these guys individually and then collectively is, because you're going to need someone who can keep everyone in check throughout the course of a game. Things happen. You have to... The game of soccer is not always fair sometimes, but that's where that great leadership comes in, both on the sideline from the technical staff and on the field from good leaders. And like you said, Nate, when you are missing one of those guys that you did rely on to help set the tempo, to help keep everyone engaged, energized, and with the right mindset throughout the course of the game, that's tough. And the Athletic guys were talking about just this game, and this is less to do with McKinney and just more so like the U.S. needs to get a win tomorrow night. And they were just talking, I forget who it was, but, you know, we've talked to plenty of those guys. They do great work over there. But over the last three World Cup cycles, all 10 teams that advanced to the tournament out of CONCACAF had at least 3 points after their first three games of the final round of qualifying.
And it looks like it's going to take 21 points now to even finish third. Well, that's if everything goes the way it has been going.
Eight of those 10 teams had at least 4 points. None of the three teams that had 2 points or fewer after their first three games over the last three cycles even advanced to the intercontinental playoff, never mind qualifying directly for the World Cup.
Now, it's a different format. I don't know how that changes things. But it sounds like historically it would tell you that a point minimum
yes.
down there. And that's disappointing. To come away with just 3 points in this little cycle would be disappointing, but a point minimum, you're still in the mix for things. But then, the other thing is, the heat's being turned up on Greg Berhalter all of a sudden.
I feel a bit bad for him, honestly. I know he's getting pelters on all over Twitter, all over Facebook, whatever. You're going to get that. But, like, you hope that when they, and look, see when they beat Mexico and when they won the Nations League and stuff like that, we were singing their praises, we were their biggest cheerleaders.
Yeah.
But you hope that that wasn't their peak. Is that what they thought was, look, this is the World Cup, now you have to qualify for, that's dead and gone. You can have all the talent in the world, see if you don't, it's nothing without hard work, hunger, desire, you have to want to be there. And I'm glad you brought up the Tyler Adams thing, that just kind of, that spoke volumes to me, because he wasn't the only one. It just looked so petulant. Even mm-hmm. down in El Salvador, the game against Canada, some of the players didn't even want to run. Like, John Brooks, as you already brought up, there was...
I would bench him.
And I know Serginho Dest.
I'm not worried that he's hurt, because he doesn't play well with this team. He's good in the... He's creative. He can do some fancy things with the ball.
He can play at the diagonal ball. Everyone loves him.
Bust your ass getting back on defense. Put some tackles in. Play with some fight. You know, that's more important. That's job one before all the fancy tricks from a yep. left back. You know, and John Brooks, man, I've seen him switch off too many times
Because it wasn't even just one in that game. I mean, there was the one Buchanan sucked him in as well and then burnt past him. And if he had been, if that kid was a bit older, you're probably talking 2-1 there. And
just because you're playing at a bigger club and have more accomplishments doesn't mean you're better for the national team. And, you know, I hope Greg Berhalter does see some of those things and start to make some adjustments. It's okay. And I know everybody in America, if you play in MLS, they don't want you to play. Right. They don't want you to sniff the national team because that implies you're not as good as all these guys in Europe. But I would defy you to tell me that there aren't some guys that are on MLS rosters right now that could be doing better right now than what we're seeing.
Well, and we talk about this with Sporting, and, like, you know, you've heard Vermees say it all the time, but, like, when they identify players that – and bring, not just identify, but then bring in players that fit the Sporting Kansas City way. And that, you know, might sound cheesy from time to time, but it's true. You have to have players that are of the same mentality and of the same understanding of what it means to be a part of that team and that system. And just because, like you said, oh, they play in Europe, that doesn't translate necessarily to a perfect fit for this team. Because if you're missing one of those key elements, which I think is effort, mm-hmm. effort for a full 90 minutes. And, like, that was perhaps maybe the biggest criticism of this U.S. national team over the last, you know, decade before all of this excitement surrounding this young group who still have yet a lot to prove in this World Cup qualifying is going to be the absolute biggest. But one of the biggest criticisms was, like, do these guys care? Like, do they care? Where is that heart? Where is that passion? And that's something that, who cares if you play in Europe, MLS, wherever you play, that's what you have to have.
For the record, I want more players in Europe. I want my players playing at the biggest clubs. And I will say this too, and then we got to wrap it up and move on to the next segment. But maybe part of the issue now too is, if you really want to get to that stage where you can really compete at the highest level, you don't just need a Weston McKennie and a Tyler Adams and a Christian Pulisic. You need somebody pushing each one of those guys where they know if they step out of line, there is someone ready to take their spot now that's also playing in a big club in Europe. And when you look at the teams like that's France true. And England and Germany, those guys, they're all playing in some big club. Mm-hmm. And there's somebody right behind them playing in a big club. And if they don't want to value that spot on their team, it is not guaranteed. And these young guys have been guaranteed a spot on the men's national team pretty much ever since the last failed qualifying campaign. And I wonder if there's a little bit of entitlement there.
Yeah, Weston McKennie's not having someone come into the bubble and then leaving the bubble. If he thinks that he's got a guy right on his heels that is ready to step in.
He didn't think he's going to be getting sent home to Italy when he did all that.
Yeah.
And I applaud Greg Berhalter for that. Some people have a problem with that. I say, good for you, because you got to set that tone right now.
It's a big call.
The team is bigger than that one guy. And I would assume that he's got the whole locker room behind him in doing that. So it could be a galvanizing moment.
Yep.
We'll see. Wednesday night's going to be big.
Like, why do I have goosebumps? I'm such a loser. I also feel like I'm, like, screaming into the mic.
Yeah, that's okay. We're going to take a break. When we come back, we're going to be joined by A-10 pilot John Tice. He's going to be doing the flyover at the game at Children's Mercy Park, the 20-year anniversary of 9/11. Right after this, this is the Sporting Kansas City Show. We're presented by Michelob Ultra. It's only worth it if you enjoy it. And we're back on the Sporting Kansas City Show on your home for SKC Soccer, Sports Radio A-10 WHB, wherever you get your podcasts. We appreciate you downloading and listening and subscribing and liking and all those things. Ali Trost and Nate Bucati with you here. Join now, and we've been talking about some USA stuff that we're maybe not so proud of with this men's national team here, and hopefully they turn it around tomorrow. I want to talk about something that we all can be really proud of, and that is what's going to happen at Children's Mercy Park on Saturday night, 9/11, 20 years after the tragedy that was 9/11. And we're going to have a flyover at the game and Sporting take on Chicago. Everybody loves the flyovers. Flyovers are awesome. And we got one of the men who's going to be involved in that flyover from Whiteman Air Force Base, A-10 pilot, and also member of the Victory Project Executive Committee, by the way. John Tice is with us. John, how are you, man?
Great. Great. Thanks. And happy to be here.
Okay. So I've gotten to know you over the years because, well, I'd see you at the games. Whenever there was an A-10 flyover, you would usually be down there afterwards, and I know that the Illigs would introduce me to you, and we'd talk a little bit. And then all of a sudden, I get asked to be on the executive board of the Victory Project, and the first meeting I go to, you're sitting in the room.
Uh-huh.
And so we've been working on the Victory Project together, trying to raise money to help kids battling cancer and all that. And we were talking at the gala about how I always see you at these flyovers, and then you told me you'd never actually been in one of the planes at Children's Mercy Park for a flyover. Is that right?
That's correct. Not at Children's Mercy. When I got to the squadron, I got back to the squadron in the end of 2016. I had previously been on active duty, left the active duty to come to the Air Force Reserve in November, December of 2016. And had really wasn't a super big soccer fan, and had gotten recalled in the A-10 about the first 3 months of 17. And they called up and said, "Hey, we need a guy to go and run radios for this flyover at the soccer stadium. Can you do it?" And I was on some full time orders at that point, and I said, "Yeah, sure. I'll whatever the squadron needs." The cool thing about that one is usually when we do those flyovers, the wives and families don't necessarily get to come because it's just mad chaos and you're working. But for whatever reason, Sporting, out of the great goodness of their hearts, they said, "Hey, bring your wives, bring your families. Let's make this a family affair." And that's kind of how it went down. My initial introduction to U.S. Soccer and MLS. That was our first game. Was me standing on the sidelines, bringing 4A10s overhead after the national anthem and trying to do that dance to get it worked out. So
your first time that you'll actually be up in the plane, but how many of these have you been a part of now?
Let's see. I've done probably 10 or so flyovers all in all. I was honored to be able to do my— I graduated from Arkansas State, Northeast Arkansas, and I was honored to be able to do one of their football flyovers. I've done a couple Royals flyovers, been involved with the Chiefs a few times. But this is the first time actually in an airplane over Sporting Kansas City Stadium.
So when you say you've done those other flyovers, you were actually in the plane flying over those other venues.
Mm-hmm.
How many times— I think Allie was asking too, how many times though at Children's Mercy Park have you been on the ground for a flyover?
I think that I've done it now three times. So
okay.
I did it 2018, 19, and then this year I did the Sporting Salutes game.
So when we were talking at the gala, I was asking you and why you had never done one at Children's Mercy Park. And what's the answer to that?
Well, it's because I'm selfish and I like to watch the games. And so if you do the flyover, which is great, don't get me wrong, it's a huge honor.
Yeah.
But then you miss typically about half the game. And so me being now the massive sporting fan that I am, which I'm glad that I say it now, but
you can't believe it, huh?
Yeah, you asked me 5 years ago. I'm like, soccer, no way. But it was good. So that's it.
Okay, so of those games, the ones that you were involved in, again, not up in the air because you can't miss all the action, but what was the most memorable game that you can remember from some of those that you've been involved in?
The most memorable game, it would have to probably be the World War II game. We did the first year was Gold Star families, so each family out of the 11 families had lost a loved one in combat. And then the next year was, I believe, World War II. And one of the executives at Sporting called me up, and he's like, "Hey, I want to make this, out of control. How do we take it to 11? If anybody's ever seen that movie, and you know what I'm talking about, it goes to 11. So he says, "Hey, how do we take this to 11?" And I'm sitting with another A-10 guy, and we're looking at each other, and one of our pilots actually has the honor of flying a P-51 Mustang. He's been in civilian air shows his whole life. He was an A-10 demo pilot, so he's kind of like the Thunderbirds, but he also flies a P-51 World War II fighter. And we both kind of looked at each other and said, "Call Rifle." And Rifle actually flew a P-51 followed by 4 A-10s. And Mike Illig from Sporting was actually in the back seat of the P-51 when they did the flyover. So that was probably— had to be the most memorable
really
one
cool.
we've done.
Until now. This one coming up is the 20-year anniversary of 9/11. And look, it's crazy to me. I'm sure we all feel the same way, that it's 20 years. Because I think to myself, when I was growing up, my parents would talk about certain moments of history that they'll always remember where they were when it happened. And I remember, and obviously my parents' generation, a lot of times they talked about when JFK was assassinated. That's a place
Elvis,
they always remember.
Yeah.
Elvis, things like that.
Yeah.
And this was one of those moments for us where, I talk to my kids now and I realize, gosh, I have three children and none of them were even anywhere near being born at the time that this happened. For you, where were you in life, all that stuff, when 9/11 happened? And I guess we'll just start there.
Yeah, so I was a junior at Arkansas State University. I was in the pre-med program there, and I remember vividly biochem was my first class of the day. And I woke up to the first tower on fire, and I'm watching it on TV, and I'm like, you know, I called a buddy of mine, and I'm like, what in the heck is going on, man? Like, and he's like, I don't know. I think an airplane, you know, went off track and ran into the tower. We don't really know what's going on. And we're watching it, the second airplane hits, and I just, you know, at that point, I was already in the Army National Guard. I joined in 1999 honestly, money for college. And
sure.
I wanted to fly airplanes, so the Army said they would let me fly helicopters. And so that was the track I was going down. So I was already a service member at that point, and I just remember thinking, you know, when I saw the second plane hit, I go, okay, that's not normal.
Yeah.
And instead of, like, you know, you look back at it now as a guy who was slightly older, you kind of look at it and you go, I should have never gone to class. I should have sat there and watched the news and realized that that was a historic event, good or bad, that's always going to be burned in your memory. And instead, I went to class because, you know, you're fixated on graduating with the best grades possible. But I wasn't paying any attention. I was watching my phone, Nokia 5160 of all things at that point, I think, in my life. And I kept getting text messages and phone calls, and I was interrupting the poor instructor's class because I was like, are we going? Are we going? Are we getting deployed? Is it now? Where are we going?
Wow.
And, you know, you just, like, I just remember it. Like it was yesterday. So
you are already, and you're talking about that. I just got chills. Like, wondering, like, is this happening now? How much did that event influence for you? You were already in it, but just those next 5, 10, and even, you know, beyond that. Just,
I think myself, along with a lot of other folks who served since, and before, you know, there were probably guys and gals that were ready to go call their recruiter and re-sign back up. I mean, it was,
mm-hmm.
Yeah. I mean, I think it was very impactful, very memorable. Yeah, I was already in, but it was definitely something that it just pushes you, you know, even further into the, you got to serve, you know, like this is the time of, you know,
yeah.
This is our time. You know, the greatest generation had their time. Okay, now it's this generation's time to serve their country.
So did you get deployed shortly thereafter?
My unit did. And I was in the ROTC program at the time at Arkansas State while simultaneously being in the National Guard. And I was about 6 months to a year away from finishing my commission in the Army. And I went into my company commander's office and I said, hey, sir, I just let you know I'm going down to ROTC and I'm going to tell them that I'm going to resign my ROTC spot so I can go with the unit when we deploy. And he's like, whoa, whoa, whoa. Let's think about this. He said, we don't even know where we're going. We don't know what we're doing. He said, just wait. And what ended up happening is my former unit went and guarded. They were put on guard like a weapons storage facility in Washington State, I believe, for about a year while another active unit had gone to Afghanistan to fight the initial days of Afghanistan.
Yeah.
And so fortunately, he told me he wasn't going to let me pull my name out of the hat. So.
So again, we're visiting with John Tice, a.k.a. Sapper, right?
Yep.
That's your call name? Is that what you call it?
That's call sign, yeah.
Call sign.
And I got that from being an Army combat engineer.
Okay. So. All right. And he's going to be doing the A-10 flyover. How many planes? There going to be four of you?
Hopefully there's going to be four.
Okay. Mm-hmm. All right. And so, but you ended up in Afghanistan at some point?
I did. I did two tours, or actually total of five tours at this point. And I did two. My first stint downrange in Afghanistan was in 2008.
Okay, so 20 years, the context of everything you just talked about. When you get in that plane and fly over Children's Mercy Park, a place you've grown to love, on a date that is so impactful in American history, in all the context that you have, will you even, like, when you're flying the plane, maybe you're just locked in and you don't have a chance, but will, like, what What emotions do you think that's going to conjure up? What kind of thoughts do you think that's going to conjure up for you?
I mean, it'll be impactful, emotional. I mean, this is one of those days that it's been something that I've wanted to fly over Sporting for a long time, and just to have the honor of being able to do it on September 11th is a big deal to me, and I know all the other guys that are involved in this, and I think it's going to be a super emotional day. I know all of us have. Everybody that's flying is deployed, and I think all of us have deployed to Afghanistan. And so we've all lost friends and loved ones over there. And so, yeah, I think it's a huge, huge impact on us, and it's going to be very humbling. Let's put it that way.
Is there anything special that you're going to bring with you into the plane?
There's a couple things. I've got a couple flags, and that's kind of our go-to. Is usually an American flag. I've got some other special tokens that I'm not going to get into at this point, but yeah, for me, I've got three flags and that I will carry on that day for sure. And I don't want to ruin the surprise because they may listen to this this later.
Yeah.
But
yes.
We have listeners. We know we have some listeners. So that's interesting because I was thinking to myself. Man, I want to give John like a little souvenir, something to put in his pocket just so I can say it flew over the stadium. But then I'm like, you probably have every person do that, and it's a small cockpit. Have you ever had to be like, hey, enough, I can't carry anything else on the plane?
So I know last year when we were deployed, we ended up putting two travel pods, which are like our luggage racks, if you will, on the bottom of an A-10. And we jammed as many American flags as we could in those two travel pods. And I want to say it was, I don't know, hundreds of flags were stuffed under an A-10. And they flew a combat mission last year with our squadron commander.
Wow.
Oh, wow.
So, yeah. And it was because so many other folks were – it's such a big day for everybody. Like, you know, they wanted the honor of having their loved one a flag flown as well. So, yeah.
Well, and Nate, you had mentioned you're involved with the Victory Project. This is also Kick Childhood Cancer. That campaign is simultaneously running through the month of September. Just for you, you know, what does that mean, just in addition to an already very emotional and meaningful day?
I think I've got a family member that has been involved in not a cancer situation, but my son has had surgery at Children's Mercy, and those folks along with Sporting have been so welcoming, so amazing that being able to be involved with the Victory Project and to meet those kids who are battling some pretty mean stuff, and Quinn was, I guess, our first young little boy that we brought in and got to fly the simulator. And so to be able to look back on those interactions with the kids, and it's really it's a great organization, and it's super, super amazing what they're doing, I guess. So I guess that's what you're asking.
Yeah. It's Yeah, September is Childhood Cancer Awareness Month, so it's always like you'll see all the yellow out. That's the color for childhood cancer. You see that all over the stadium. 9/11, I mean, there's just going to be a lot of emotions running hard. I mean, my favorite moment every game is when we see the kid in the victory suite and they chant the young person's name. And it's cool getting to know you, John, getting to be a part of the executive committee and just trying to do what we can to see how much work goes in all the stuff to raise the money for the Victory Project. It's another reason I feel like Sporting's more than just a club. All right, I'm gonna wrap it up with this. And I don't know, maybe this is a military secret you can't give away, and if it is, we'll cut it out of the interview. But like if I'm looking up, I want our listeners to be able to put a voice with the plane that's going up over. Do you know which one you'll be in the formation? So, like, if anybody's listening to the podcast, they can go, there goes John, right? There goes Sapper right there. Like, he's the one there.
Yeah, I think as it stands right now, I'll be the kind of the odd man out. So I'm going to be number two.
Okay.
So I'll be on my own side of our squadron commander, who's actually leading the four-ship. And then our number two guy in the squadron will be leading the other element. So
it's like a V formation?
It'll be
a check mark formation.
It'll be kind of a check mark more than that. And so one side side will be one guy, and the other side will be two guys.
You'll be the one guy on the side.
I should be the one, and it's probably because they don't want to put somebody else out. I don't know.
I just want to know which one you're going to be, because that way when you fly over, I can be like, there he is, right? There's my guy right there.
Yeah, I'll be the guy that's alone and unafraid out there by myself. Man. So.
And then you'll be able to hopefully catch the second half of the game?
That's the plan. We're going to land at an airport close by to the stadium, and then they'll have a car to come grab us, and then we're going to head back to the stadium and watch the second half.
Sporting scores a lot of goals in the second half, so you know maybe they'll save one or two for you.
That's been their jam all year. I love it. I wish they would get into like getting the lead and keeping the lead, but instead of trying to come from behind.
Well, maybe you'll be the inspiration the guys need.
Here's hoping.
They'll see you fly, and they'll give a little extra boost.
Well, hey, and after that game against LAFC, they've got to be itching for a win here.
That was a tough one.
You know what? It's awesome. It's awesome always to hear stories about people that maybe didn't even consider soccer before that are now all of a sudden diehard fans like yourself. It's always fun to see you at the games. Thanks for everything you do for the Victory Project. Thanks for everything you've done for our country. And thank you for what you'll be doing on Saturday. We'll all be watching you.
Well, thanks for having me. And it's been, as always, a privilege and an honor to be here. So thanks.
A-10 pilot from Whiteman Air Force Base, John Tice Sapper. Is the call name, right?
Yeah.
Get that right? Okay, he'll be doing the flyover on September 11th. We'll take a break. When we come back, Connell's going to rejoin us, and we'll start previewing the match a little bit against the Chicago Fire right after this on the Sporting Kansas City Show. And we're back on the Sporting Kansas City Show on your home for SKC Soccer, Sports Radio 810 WHB. Nate Bucati, along with Connell McCourt and Allie Trost. And our thanks to John Tice. Sapper for joining us on the show as well. You can look for him. He'll be the one on the small side of the checkmark formation.
I'm so excited. I always get so emotional anytime there's a flyover. It's such a moving thing. So really cool for him getting to be in the air over Children's Mercy Park for the first time. I'm sure it looks real nice from up there.
It's going to be cool. All right. Listen, we're going to talk about this game against Chicago, but I do think we have to rewind a little bit. To the last game Sporting loses to LAFC, and they get a red card to Roger Espinoza, and on video review, Peter Vermees went off on the officiating afterwards. Graham Zusi, who usually, maybe that stands out to you a little bit more, not a guy you hear go after the refs very often.
Well, and I was not expecting for him to walk over, because usually this is just a little behind-the-scenes look at how things go down on our broadcast, but I usually connect with one of the communications guys over at Sporting, about 10 minutes left in the game. Hey, post-game, we'll talk to Peter, and whenever it's a loss, you usually just limit it to one interview. I'm like, how about Elie Sanchez? And all of a sudden I look over and Graham Zusi's walking my way. I'm like, and Graham's usually a guy who, he'll do media stuff, but he's not usually the one, despite being a, veteran, he's not always.
He doesn't love to talk.
No.
That's, he's a quiet guy.
Yeah.
You know?
And he had a lot to say. I was just
So this has been a recurring theme, though. Sporting have had now in their last two road games a red card. Peter Vermees was basically unabashed in his criticism of the refs after both of those games. And he spoke to the media today, though, Allie, and I know you were on the call, and he was asked about it, and he basically said that's all coming to an end.
I'm going to be very limited with my comments, not because anyone has said anything to me, not ownership, not the league or anyone. Nobody's influenced me in any regard to what I'm going to tell you. But when it comes to the referees, I can tell all of you right now, I won't be talking about them anymore. When it comes to the team, when it comes to our upcoming game, I'll be happy to answer all those questions. But my decision is I won't be commenting on the referees anymore. In regards to the other, I was provided with probably some good information that if we were to appeal it, they probably wouldn't overturn it based on the numbers of votes, and so it was probably. It was the right decision to not appeal it based on the fact that I wanted to make sure that we kept one of those appeals for later on in the season or in the playoffs, because it could be very, very important.
So Peter's not going to talk about officiating anymore. And I don't know about you guys. I think that's probably the right thing.
Yeah.
This team, clearly the players, you could tell by the reaction on the field, what Graham had to say to you, they all feel like they're being harshly done by. But I think you also get to a point where Peter said what he's had to say. Mm-hmm. I do think that carries some weight in the dressing room, and I think that the players feel like they know he's got their back. And now you just got to put it away and go play because it clearly is not doing you any good, mm-hmm. right? Like the league's not changing any calls. They're not making any apologies. They don't have your back. They don't see your side yeah. on this thing. And so at this point in time, you just kind of have to go, okay, it is what it is. It's us against everybody, and let's move forward and stop talking about it. That's what I took from it. What did you take from it, Allie?
Yeah, no, I couldn't agree with you more. And especially, you know, as you get into this final stretch of the season, you get into the playoffs, things are going to happen. And whether it's fair or not, it's just – and this team, though, has also proven that they have been able to battle through some of those – adversities. I mean, the Minnesota game, I think, is a perfect example where you lose a player so early in the game, you're on the road, and then you're able to battle out and walk away with a point. Sometimes that's the situation that you're going to be faced with, and this team is more than capable of dealing with it. I think when you look at that LAFC game, and Vermees, I'm pretty sure in his post-game press conference, I was catching pieces of it, but talked about, you know, the Kyrie Shelton non-red card against mm-hmm. the goalkeeper when he was stepped on several times and had to go to the hospital. And I think that, you know, was definitely on the minds of the team, because it's one thing to not have a call go your way and negatively impact your team, but it's another when your team on the other side doesn't get some of those calls sometimes. And I know Kyrie's a player who's probably maybe on more accounts than one not gotten calls just because he does fight through things, and that has, you know, I think hurt him and the team at times, and that's not any fault of his own. And you know, Vermees and the guys will say this as well, like, we're a team that we're not going to flop. We are going to battle through. We're going to fight. Even if we're in the box, we are going to fight till the whistle blows, and, you know, until the play's absolutely dead or until the ball's in the back of the net. So I'm with you. I think it's, you know, something like the team can have this understanding and knowing that, hey, our manager's got our back, we've got each other's backs. And yeah, us against the world, like, let's go do this thing. And whatever happens, happens. But yeah, up to this point, nothing that has been said in these press conferences or, you know, to the media has come back and changed anything. And you know, Vermees also talking there that we're not, you know, he didn't appeal the Roger Espinoza red card, had inside knowledge that there wouldn't be enough votes to overturn it. And you only get so, you know, you. Those are very precious things. If you're going to appeal it, you better be pretty darn sure that right. it was egregious.
I mean, because sometimes when I looked at it, I mean, you could see it. It could go either way. I don't think it was intentional at all what Espinoza did, but I mean, he still went down the back of his leg, and it is what it is. Referee sent them off, but I think you're right in that, like, put it to bed, because they've spoke about it. They're angry about it. You can tell, like, the last win was against Dallas 5 games ago. So it's starting to, you can tell there's a bit of pressure, but they need to just come out and respond to it. They need to put all that to bed. Obviously, look, you're not going to have Roger for the next few games. That'll probably give Mowry a bit more of a chance to get some more masses in his legs. Just look at the positives. Sporting are playing well. There's not going to be another game like that LAFC game. It was just Murphy's Law. Everything that could go wrong went wrong. I mean, even as you were saying, Kyrie's harshly treated. Kyrie's fouled Latif Blessing before the goal. Just everything that happened just seemed to be going against Sporting, and that's the way the trend was going. So I get that Peter was angry, and it might actually be good for them because it'll give them a bit between their teeth. And Chicago they're not ripping up any trees like usually, or as usual. That's what we kind of come to expect of them. So this could be an angry Sporting KC team going out here on Saturday and putting an absolute beating on Chicago.
We'll see. Chicago are 11th place in the Eastern Conference right now. Away from home, they're 1-7-1. So Sporting KC will be looking to get back on the right side of things at home. And that's another issue, though, that we have to talk about. They've got to find a way to break this cycle of falling behind in games at home. Teams come in here and they look to bunker in. We know that. And the best way to get them to stop bunkering is to go score the first goal, right? Mm-hmm. Because then the other team has to open up and try to play a little bit. And that's usually when we have those fun games where Sporting's banging 3-4 goals and dominating the game. But they keep falling behind. I don't know about you guys. I feel like there's a little bit of a fluky nature to it. There are certain things that happen. Clearly, teams are hitting on the counter sometimes and catching Sporting in moments. Sometimes I think they're just catching a couple of bad breaks here and there early in games. Sometimes I think they go out and they're trying to be cautious and patient with the ball because they don't want to get caught on the counter. But then when you do that, you lose some of that gumption that you have to go and be, you know, possession with a purpose. So there's almost like a little bit of a self-fulfilling prophecy to the whole thing. I do think they're going to solve it. I just don't think this team's going to keep giving up the first goal at home all year long. And if they can solve it, then I think all of a sudden they become that dynamite team at home that we're used to seeing.
Well, and they've just been so good defensively. I mean, if you just look like from a percentage standpoint of how Sporting plays throughout the course of a game, it's like that small percentage where, yeah, there is a bit of a flukiness to it because the teams that have done that in recent weeks at home do it on limited chances. It's like they'll have two shots on goal the entire game and one of them turns into a goal, and it's like not at all representative of who dominated the game, who had the bulk of the chances. And that's the thing. It's like Sporting will continue to then create in those games, but it's very hard to find quality chances in and around the box without some absolute magic happening when you've got teams playing in such a low block with so many bodies in the box, because it just makes it really tough to get anything going, you know, off of... You just have to rely on a set piece, a corner, or hope that on one of the crosses that you're sending in or somewhere through the run of play, you're able to find that little bit of space, which, hey, Daniel Shalloway is a player who's been able to score with limited amounts of space. Like, he can get a shot off, you know, in about an inch of ground. So they can do it. It's just really tough when that's how you have to play for a majority of a game. And when you concede first and concede first early, teams then commit to this style to just try and, hey, if we can keep them from scoring, we get 3 points. And if they score, well, we walk away from Children's Mercy Park with a point, which is a game plan a lot of teams have, whether you're in the Eastern Conference like Chicago or the Western Conference.
And I think Daniel was a big miss in LA. Because this year, I mean, obviously with the goals and stuff he scored, but just that, as you said, like that gumption, that attacking. I mean, he has this year, he's a different animal, and he's tenacious, he's chasing everything down, he's giving defenders a horrible time. But I think Issy Mat-Marin coming back as well is a massive, massive plus for Sporting, because you don't want to fall into where there's a template to play against you. And see any team coming into, especially coming into Children's Mercy Park now, they're thinking, all they need to do is score the first goal and then we'll sit back and then try and catch them when they're overcommitting. If there's a lack of legs at the back or whatever, and then we'll try and just pop it over the top. Bringing back AC there, that kind of solves a bit of that, because he's quick, he's pacey, he's a hard, rambunctious defender. Bringing him back and then bringing Daniel back as well, I think will give... You're kind of looking at a different team as well. Gotti coming back from Israel as well. So you hope they do solve it. And it kind of all is, in as simple as that, you have to score the first goal. Or at least apply enough pressure so that they can't catch us on the counter. But you don't want to get into the situation where it becomes a habit, conceding first and having to work twice as hard to get back into the game. And I know it's worked a few times this year. We have the stats to prove that they come back from dropping behind early. But you wanted to see, this is the chance, go out and put in a good performance against Chicago and score the first goal.
Yeah, it's a good point to point out that Gadi Kinda just got a few minutes today for Israel out of the three games. So he's not going to be – he shouldn't have tired legs. He might be, you know, have some travel legs on him. But when he comes back to Kansas City, he wasn't overused. That's for sure. A little frustrating to lose your player.
But it does take you out of form with training and that consistency. And that was, you know, Peter the other week was saying how, hey, it's a good thing for us, for Pulido, and for Mexico that he didn't get called up. Because if you're not going to use him and you've got game, you know, this run of games back to back to back, well, you're not getting full training in because you're getting ready for a game. And if whether you're used or not, you're still affected by that lack of training. So hopefully, Gotti, I think, will come back and work right back in. But, you know, it's just something to consider with some of these players getting called up. How much are they actually playing and what kind of form are they coming back in?
And Shalloway will find out how much he plays in their final game tomorrow. Hungary wraps up their three-game window as well. So hopefully he's starting to get a little bit back to more full strength. And then maybe we'll see if Peter Ramiz uses some more subs. I know we talked about that more at the news conference today and didn't, you know, look, he's going to keep his cards close to the vest on that. But I do think if you have a healthy EC, a healthy guy to Kinda. Mowry's working his way in. Shallery's in. You might start to see a little bit more rotation with the team. We will see as time goes on. That's going to do it for us. Our thanks to John Tyus for joining us, for Ali Trost and Connell McCourt. This is Nate Bucati. Again, don't forget, 7:30 on Saturday night. You can listen to it live right here on Sports Radio 810 WHB. You can watch it on Bally Sports Kansas City, Sporting take on Chicago Fire FC. We'll see you next time right here on the Sporting Kansas City Show, presented by Michelob Ultra.